Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dedicate podcast. I'm your host, Kate Ivey. Today, I'm chatting to the wonderful Nadine Hickman. I met Nadine last week in Blenheim. I was a mystery speaker at the AFK Dinner Date, a group for rural women in the Awatere, Flaxbourne and Kekerangu areas, south of Blenheim. Nadine is one of the organisers. It's such a great idea for rural women, and I hope to see more pop up around New Zealand. I know of one other, as I've been to plenty in Aussie. Nadine talks to us about what she has learned through being a competitive gymnast, missing out on the Commonwealth Games, overcoming bulimia, and the juggle of family and farm life and her career. Nadine is the creator of Pep Talk, a weekly newsletter with tools and knowledge to help people conquer their minds. She chats about this and what's ahead and gives us a lot of valuable mindset advice. An incredible episode. I hope you enjoy. Nice to see you again so soon.
Yes, it is. Yep. Via the screen rather
than... Yeah. I have that top.
Oh, do you? Yeah. I always get comments on this top every time I wear it. I love that colour.
Yeah, the colours, it's a nice purple and the textures are nice too.
Cozy. Yeah, it's a little bit cooler today.
Yeah, same here.
Which is kind of nice. And
yeah, that's nice.
It would bring a little bit of moisture with it. But...
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. You guys dry there?
Really dry, yeah. Yes. And we were dry even before Christmas.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, no, we had a really crappy spring as well. Yeah.
So dry. Very stressful times.
Yeah.
Farmers know how to get through droughts.
Yeah, that's right. We have, you know, you forget we've been here before many times. Yeah.
It used to happen a lot more frequently, I think.
Yeah.
Growing up. I grew up in Cheviot. It was always dry there, and we used to holiday in the Sounds and going through Seddon and Ward and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, every year it was just, the fires, there were always fires.
Yeah.
And just so dry.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it doesn't make it easy though, just because it's happened before.
Yeah. I mean, if you only knew when it was coming.
Knew when the rain was coming. And that's the hardest thing, isn't it? Selling off stock, or do you not? Do you hold on to it? Yeah.
Yeah.
The juggle.
Yeah, it is. It's just so many things out of your control with farming, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. What's been hard for us this season is, my husband's only had one night away off the farm, or one night at a time, and he couldn't come on our family holiday because it was too dry. And that's when you need the break. When things are tough and stressful.
That's the thing. It's like, like the things, you know, when we're feeling at our worst is when we most need to do the things that are good for us, but we least can or want to. Yeah.
We can go into that a bit today, which will be cool. But first of all, I'd love to get to know you on a more personal level. This is very exciting. So you were a Commonwealth Games gymnast. Wow.
Yeah, well, so I was in the squad training for the Commonwealth Games, the 94 Commonwealth Games, and it was, a childhood dream. And I don't remember when I decided that, but, I think I was probably only 6 or 7 years old and I decided I was going to go to the Commonwealth Games. And, I was a gymnast and lived and breathed gymnastics. You know, in my childhood, I was just constantly doing flips across the lawn and, Mum tells the story how I'd go out to the garage and just have a mattress out there and just be doing, flip flack after flip flack, and my face would be bright red and I'd just keep on going until I got it.
You go to the Commonwealth Games or you didn't quite
know? So I missed out on the final team. Still something that I live with, like that. What I perceive as failure. And I think the hardest thing is that, I always really felt like I let myself down. I had to really, to make the team, I had to move to Auckland. Mm-hmm. So I was the only gymnast that in the squad that wasn't living in Auckland.
Where were you?
So I was in Blenheim.
Yeah. Are you born and bred Blenheim or?
Born and partly bred in Southland.
Yeah.
Invercargill. And then, we moved up to Marlborough. So did most of my gymnastics training in Blenheim. It was hard and lonely because I was the only one at my level in Blenheim. So, a lot of it was on my own and pushing myself. My mum used to take me to the gym club every morning before school. So I do like an hour before school and then every night after school and every weekend as well. So it was sort of, you know, about around about 30 hours a week training.
Wow. And what age were you at this time?
So I was, yeah, really sort of at my peak. I was kind of that 14, 15, 16. I retired from gym when I was 17.
Yeah, it's a really young sport, isn't it? You do it when you're young.
It is. And that's the real challenge about it, because as a teenager, you're already going through so much stuff. But that is just the reality of that's when you're at your peak in that sport.
Mm, and a lot of the mental skills haven't been developed yet, have they? Because you're still so young.
Exactly. And, you know, I look, you know, look back now at, yeah, some of the beliefs that I formed in that time that now, you know, your more logical, mature mind can think about that in a different way than I did back then.
And
you
know, so
and you've got all the things like peer pressure and wanting to fit in with your friends who are not doing that stuff, you know, like going out partying. And
yeah,
there's a lot of different pressures to it. Yeah.
So how old were you when you were in the squad to go to the Commonwealth Games?
So 15, I was in the squad. Yeah. And yes, I spent a lot of time training in Auckland, and I got, you know, really homesick, and it was just a really intense place to be. You know, you're just being pushed to your limits every training session. I remember like driving on the drive to every training session, you know, just be full of kind of dread and fear. You know, I've been made to do moves I was scared of, or just, you know, being yelled at. Yeah, you really were pushed to your physical limits at every session. You were completely physically exhausted.
How many of you were in the squad?
So there were six in the squad and four that, went.
So that's hard, yeah. And so you say that you still, you know, carry a lot of that. What are the words? Fear of failure, that self-belief that got crushed by not making that squad. So with the lens you've got now, if you knew what you knew now, what could have you done differently to make the squad? You know, what's driving you to still carry it now?
Yeah, I think we have those two voices, and one is that, you know, self-compassion that says, you know, you were going through so much, all those, you know, teenage hormones and all of that different stuff that you already have as a teenager to deal with. And then, you know, and being away from home and dealing with homesickness. You know, I was struggling with other issues to do with body image. I did develop an eating disorder. So you've got, you know, all of that stuff. And you know, you say, it's okay that I let myself down. You know, I had all of that going on. And you try to give yourself that self-compassion. And then there's the other voice, which is like the critic that is saying, that's just a cop-out, you know, you're just making excuses. And you feel like the self-compassion is, you know, why it's so hard to give ourselves self-compassion is because we think that, you know, if we do that, we're never going to be able to push ourselves to achieve our goals. We think we're just going to become lazy and unmotivated. But, you know, really the opposite is true. And there's a really great book by Kristen Neff called Self-Compassion. And, you know, she talks about that's the number one reason why people resist being compassionate to themselves, is because they think, you know, they're not going to be driven and motivated. They're just going to let themselves off the hook.
Yeah, I know what you mean. At the moment with this concussion, I'm working on slowing down and giving my nervous system a break. And I've got this like fear that I'll get too sleepy and tired and won't feel like doing stuff. But what's fascinating is the opposite is actually happening. You know, you feel more in the flow and more focused on what you're doing. So the fear is there, but it's one of those irrational fears, isn't it?
Yeah, and the more we, you know, work through the stuff, we learn about ourselves. And, you know, that's just such a key thing, is that awareness of yourself and, yeah, learning, okay, well, if I take it easy today, it's not the end of the world. But, it's balancing that. And knowing.
Yeah, and when do you take it easy and when do you not?
Exactly.
And I find that with nutrition too. Like, when do you have the cake and when do you not?
Yeah.
So I find it easier just to not have cake, because otherwise I'd have cake every day, because what, when are we allowed to have it? When are we not?
Yeah.
It's so confusing.
Yeah.
Something I thought was interesting. You said that you let yourself down by not getting into that squad. So do you still believe that you let yourself down, or do you think you did everything that you could at that time in your life to get in the squad and two people were always going to miss out? Or do you think,
Yeah, I guess the hard thing is that I know deep down that, you know, I was good enough. I had the skill to do it. But, yeah, I know that I had to, you know, make that move to shift to Auckland. But the reality is you can only do what you can do at the time with what you have at the time. You know, definitely it still lives with, you know, within me. And I think for about 20 years, you know, I couldn't even think about it. It was so painful, that feeling of letting myself down. You know, and that can get you into a cycle that you just keep, you know, repeating that, almost like a self-sabotage. But no, I think that's just a constant learning, and that's why I'm, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm so fascinated in all this mind stuff is because we have to be constantly working on ourselves and letting go of those things within us that hold us back.
Yeah, because if it hadn't been that, right?
Yeah.
So say you made it to the Commonwealth Games and then you got it and you did your event and you didn't perform as well as you wanted to perform, then you'd be sitting here potentially carrying that with you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So if it, what, you know, there's always something.
There's always something.
If we have that mindset,
you've got to look, you know, sometimes I look back, you know, across everything, you know, everything that's happened in your life, and you wouldn't be, you know, I think everything I have in my life, my kids, my husband, where I live, what I'm doing now, you know, if all of those things hadn't happened exactly as they had, I wouldn't be where I am now. And I love where I am now. I love, you know, I really do love my life.
Yeah. And that's what I love about challenges is they're horrible and it's the hardest time, but beauty does shine through. Amazing experiences come from them and it leads us to where we are.
Yeah. Most definitely. Yeah.
And gosh, wow, what you've achieved just being in that squad of six to go, you know, to give yourself the opportunity to have gone, that is incredible. Yeah. All that sacrifice that you did as a teenager is incredible. And you should be so, so proud of yourself.
It's another reframe of failure is that, you know, if you weren't pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and trying things, well, yeah, sure, you would never fail. But the fact, you know, we need to look at the fact that we fail, or, you know, quote unquote fail, to use, you know, using that word, it's not a very nice word.
No.
But yeah, if we're not failing, we're not doing things. Yeah,
you can't succeed without failure. Yeah. It's just how it is. No. Yeah.
And, you know, I heard once, which is a really cool thing that sort of instills a bit of hope as well, when you feel like, you know, you're having sort of a few failures, that it only takes one success to wipe out 100 failures. You know, all you need is, in life, you know, all you need is every now and then a wee glimmer of hope to just keep you going when you're going through a hard time.
Yeah, so true. And, yeah, you just learn so much from it. Don't you?
Yep.
And it's those failures, you learn from those failures to enable you to be successful.
Yes. If we work on that self-awareness to learn from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's not a waste, you know, it has meaning and it has purpose if we can take the lessons and the growth. Mm. And I really believe that's the meaning of life. Like, I think we are here to learn, to grow, to evolve. And I'm just, you know, it's just something that's in me, as much as, you know, I often wish I could just chill and not keep pushing and driving myself to achieve things. But, you know, it's just in me that I want to, you know, I want to be the best version of myself. And if I come up against something that's hard, then, you know, like public speaking or even being on this podcast, you know, it's something that's really hard. And, you know, if I take the example of public speaking, you know, one reason I want to be better at that is because I want to have a voice and share what I've learned with others. But the other reason is just for the sheer fact that it's something I find challenging means that there's a block inside of me that I have to, you know, dig into that and find out why, you know, where does that fear come from?
I think so many of us have that fear of public speaking.
Yeah. And when you really break it down, it's like, why?
Yeah.
And you
I think it's everyone just staring at you.
It is. Yeah. And I like, you know, there's two things, really big things at play that make us who we are. And one is all of the experiences we've had our whole life up until where we are now that have formed our beliefs and everything inside of us. But the other is just evolution and the stuff, you know, that science tells us is just wired into our DNA.
Mm.
And two of the big ones, the one that relates to the public speaking thing, the big one is that need for social inclusion, because if we go trace back, you know, our ancestry, being included in the tribe was, you know, that was a matter of life and death. And yet it's not a matter of life and death now, but we still have that within us.
And so the public speaking kind of, you're putting yourself out there and open to criticism.
Yeah, aren't you? You are, yes. And, you know, back in the day, if you were, you know, out on your own, you had to fend for yourself. And, that would be a life and death situation. But it's not quite the same thing when you're just standing up in front of a group of people, but inside us it can feel the same.
You spoke really well when you spoke in Blenheim. Something that's helped me is reminding myself that I've been asked to speak, so I'm speaking, and it's me. So if I come across differently to what people were expecting, or if it doesn't flow that well or whatever, it's me. That is who I am.
Yes.
I'm not a professional speaker, but I am there to share my journey, and however it comes across is who I, you know, that's who I am. So
yeah.
And obviously you get better with practice. So you just have to keep putting yourself out there, because the more you do it, the better you get. But yeah, does that make sense? Just realizing that it's my story that I'm telling. So I'm telling it my way. And if I fumble, well, that's me. I fumble when I speak in front of people. That's just how it is. So they're getting me. Does it sort of make sense?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think believing that you have something valuable to share, that, you know, we just think, well, our story is just our story. We'll who wants to hear that? But, yeah, we do have something valuable to share. And I know that, you know, I've just spent so much time learning. You know, I can't get enough. You know, sometimes I get a bit stuck in learning and taking information in. Mm-hmm. And I know I have a lot to share. It's believing in that and having a voice and putting it out there in the unique way that I can. Because
that way of putting it, in the unique way that you can share it. Yeah, I like that.
Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there talking about this stuff. You know, I listen to so many podcasts, and what I get, you know, it might be this expert, you know, telling the same thing as this expert, but they say it in a slightly different way. Mm-hmm. And you get it.
You get the aha moment that you need.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you happy to talk to us more about your experiences with bulimia and body image?
Yes. Yeah. It's something I've got more comfortable with talking about over the years. And I have, you know, talked about it sort of publicly a couple of times. I think my husband put it to me way back when I really did first start talking about it, and that it's like, you know, ripping the scab off the shame, you know. And so I think that really does help, to help you to let go of the shame, because when I look back at it, I think about, God, the irrational thoughts that, you know, that I had, and there's just destructive behaviors, and you think, it's hard to say, it's hard to admit to.
But I'm sure you said in your notes to me that you don't blame gymnastics for it, but surely that was the catalyst.
Well, I mean, yeah, definitely, like, as a tangible thing, like I know it was those, you know, weigh-ins and fat testing and knowing that, you know, what was going to happen if I, you know, if my body fat percentage was too high, was I going to be out of the squad? You know, that I didn't really probably think about that, but that's, yeah, clearly what was inside of me was that fear. I don't, like, now my logical mind knows that it's just aerodynamics, like it's just physics, that you need to have a lean, muscly body to do the things that gymnasts do and perform at that elite level. But, you know, back then that caused my whole self-worth to become wrapped up in the size and shape of my body.
But back then they wouldn't have framed it in a way that made you feel positive, whereas hopefully now there's a bit more positivity towards it. And a bit more help on how you can achieve, you know, like, did you have help on how you could achieve that right body? Or were you just expected to work out how to do it yourself at 15 years old?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, there was absolutely no nutrition type advice. You know, mental health just was not something that was even uttered back then. And in the sports space, definitely the mind coaching was something that happened, you know, even back then. And now it's a massive part of sport. I mean, you know, I think people understand that the mental aspect is even more important than the physical aspect. With Pep Talk, you know, I interviewed Lisa Carrington and you know, she put it like, I can only push myself, you know, as far as my mind will allow me to. We did work with mental coaches and sports psychologists. And, you know, that was another thing that, you know, that was the first thing really that planted the seeds of the whole fascination with the mind in me, because I just got really excited about, you know, what's possible for us if we can take control of, you know, it's this incredible tool, our mind. But yeah, as far as in the general mainstream public, you know, mental health just wasn't something that was ever talked about. So I'm sure now things are dealt with in a much more positive way.
Yeah, I'd say there's still a lot of issues. You know, it's probably not where it needs to be yet.
Yeah.
Judging by, you know, little things that come out in the media from time to time, well, the cycling things that came out a few years ago. So your story, how long did you have it for?
So 8 years. So really 2 years, the last 2 years of my gymnastics career, and then, carried on for like another 6 years after that. And it's just this all-consuming thing. And when I look back over those years, you know, of course I had a lot of great times. And outwardly I was living a pretty normal life, and I went to teachers college, had lots of great times as a student, went and did my OE. That was with me the whole time, both mentally what was going on inside my mind, and also, just the behaviors, the daily behaviors of, you know, it, on one hand, it's a sort of a double whammy. On one hand, like, food was an addiction, and, you know, it was my vice. And I guess that's how it started. And again, I don't really remember this, but I guess, you know, it started through with all those pressures during gymnastics. I started using food as a vice to cope.
Yeah.
And then you do that and it becomes almost this frenzied binging. And then after that, you know, it's a whole new frenzy of panic. Oh my God, I've got to get this out of here. So it's a horrible cycle to be in.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes such an ingrained habit. And it's, not easy to break, especially when that habit is caused by, you know, these really
deep-rooted sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, to look at, could you tell you had bulimia?
No, so, you know, this is one of the completely crazy thoughts, you know, I used to think, because over that 8 years, well, after after I finished gymnastics, so for that 6 years that I was suffering from the bulimia after that, my weight really yo-yoed, and probably within, you know, probably about 10 kg, but, you know, I'm fairly short, so that's quite a big noticeable variance. And yeah, I mean, certainly no one knew that I was aware of, and still, until I decided I wanted to get help and started telling people. You know, I used to think to myself, you know, when my weight would balloon, I would think to myself, oh, I can't even be a good bulimic. I'm not even good at this.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. It's so irrational, but yeah, that's what the mind can do to us.
And so to get over it, you had therapy, you had support. How did you get through it?
So once, in some ways, the most challenging part was when I really, reached out and asked for help, and, you know, told my mum, told some close friends, and started getting that help. Because before that, I guess I was just in it. Now I was really trying to get out of it, and I was trying to do everything I could. And I was, you know, I was going to like support groups, to counseling, psychologists. I had some really good help, but, you know, I couldn't stop. And so that's where that real feeling of helplessness started to really kick in. And the thing that saved me in the end, it felt like an overnight miracle. So I went to this new GP, and he prescribed me an antidepressant medication, which stopped literally overnight that compulsion with the food and the addiction. So that just went, and it just felt, really did feel like a miracle. So that just stopped, and from there, I guess it was then dealing with those other deeper things.
Yeah. And how long did it take to work through those, or is it still an ongoing sort of a thing?
Yeah, I think that's an ongoing thing. Maybe we never really get there. It's like with the whole self-awareness thing, it's like opening the hood up on the car and, you know, really having a look inside there. And there's a lot of things in there that serve us, that are good for us, but there's also a lot of things that limit us, and there's some things that need a little bit of adjustment, and there's some things, you know, some beliefs that we need to completely get rid of.
It's so fascinating, isn't it? I've been getting a lot into the mindset things over the last year or so, and believe that everybody should be working on their minds and be getting some form of mindset coaching or joining pep talk and getting all that advice. That it's not just something that you do. It's ambulance at the top of the cliff, not ambulance at the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, I think that really, if we're talking about challenges, I think the only challenge we actually really have is the challenge of managing our mind, because all other challenges really do stem from that.
You're right. Yeah. It's how you look at something.
Yeah.
Because nothing is real, really. It's all how you perceive it.
Exactly. It's all just a mind construct of how you're thinking about it. Yeah. But, you know, that is not really a popular concept, because it takes us to have extreme ownership of over our life. Sometimes it's easier to blame our situation, our circumstances, other people, the things that might have happened to us in the past. It's our mind that determines how we think, how we feel, the things we say, how we act. It's really is the, you know, what we need to be working on. The quality of our mind determines the quality of our life.
And exercise helps the quality of our minds too, guys. Yeah. I'll just add that in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that's one of the things that sometimes I get a little bit stuck in. The more information I learn, it's like there's so much to this. It's not just a matter of changing your thoughts and living happily ever after. Mm. And that, you know, the exercise thing is huge. So you've sort of got the physical, which is your nutrition, exercise, and sleep is another big one.
Sleep's huge, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's kind of
that's top of the list.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. We can go, the things we need physically are oxygen, food, water, sleep, to survive. And you can go, if you go a day, obviously oxygen's number one. But if you say you go a day.
A bit buggered without that one.
Yeah. If you go, you can go a day without food or water and probably keep functioning pretty well, but you go a day without sleep and, everything sort of starts to fall apart.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah. But it's it's like you need to get those, you really need to look at those three things first, the sleep, the nutrition, the exercise, because otherwise if you're trying to work on your mind, it's a bit like pushing shit uphill.
Yeah, but at the same time, don't you think, like, for example, I've sorted my nutrition out a lot this year. I'm feeling fabulous with how it's going. And I've been in and out of things with my nutrition for a few years. And the reason my nutrition, I think, is going so well now is because, like, I had therapy last year. So I've got a really good platform to build on.
Yeah. And that's where it's all so interconnected. And that makes sense because we are interconnected, I teach yoga and, over the years there's been so many of my students who maybe have come with a sore back, but, it's not their back, it's because they've got tight hamstrings or hip flexors, so everything in our body is connected, but so is that all connected with our mind and that deeper stuff too. But you can't just take one thing.
No.
So unfortunately, it's not that simple.
No. But we can, I guess, take one thing at a time, can't we?
Yes. Yeah,
work on one thing at a time and just gradually build up a repertoire of skills.
Yeah.
For me, it's calming my nervous system at the moment, breathing, taking breaks.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really big, the nervous system is huge. And, the nutrition and exercise and sleep obviously come into that. But that whole stress response, when it kicks in, it's very hard to take back control of it. Mm. And, I once heard it described like a seesaw, that autonomic nervous system. And at one end, you've got calm, and the other end, you've got your highly alert, agitated. Mm. And it's just finding those ways to get that into balance.
Mm-hmm. Instead of someone jumping on one end, you just go boom.
Yeah.
To the other.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can feel when that happens, it just happens so fast. And we all know those feelings that kick in our body, the shaking and the sweating or the flushed face or the heart, the racing heart, short breathing.
Someone described it to me another way too that was quite helpful. It might have even been you. I can't remember who it was. Green zone, orange zone, and red zone. And if you're always in the orange zone, then you're going to flick to that red zone just at anything little, kids' challenges, whatever it is, you go straight to that red zone. But if we can try and be in that green zone, then we've got to go through orange first to actually get to red. So,
I read that in the book, The Mindful Parent. Have you read that?
Yes, it was. Yes, I know what it was. Now my friend was telling me about The Mindful Parent.
She did the course.
There's a course, isn't there?
Mm, she wrote an article for Pet Talk. That's how I come across
it. Oh, wow. How cool.
Yeah. Now having those images of, the traffic lights with the red, orange and green, and it's so helpful. Yeah. And we can feel, getting back to the self-awareness piece, it's being able to be aware of that happening within ourselves so we can take back control of it. And our breath is the powerful tool to be able to do that.
My hit to the head came at the right time for me. It was a sign I needed to work on that.
Yep.
So I found it really interesting when you sent through the information about you that you were a teacher. And you're not sure why you decided to be a teacher. It wasn't your passion. Journalism's your passion. Yeah. I guess you said you don't know why, but I want to sort of dig a bit deeper and think, why did you think?
Yeah, like I really don't know, but I guess, you know, in a way, I suppose that is also a passion because I love teaching, you know, mm-hmm. with teaching yoga and teaching through pep talk. I'm just thinking that now, actually, it obviously that is something that is also,
nice. I like
about,
it.
But I didn't really think about that. I guess, I always thought about, you know, I think it's a really great, you know, life tip to follow what you're curious about and what interests you and what you love to do as a child. Mm. And, you know, I just remember really loving writing and designing, like presenting a topic on a poster, you know, would be my dream school project.
You would have been great to partner with, you know, when in that peer work.
Yeah, put in a group with me was great. Yeah. Although my problem was and still was today, I'm not so good at that delegation thing.
That's definitely a good skill to
work
on, isn't it? But it's hard to let go of that control and be okay with things not being done exactly how you would do them. And it's not that they're done wrong. It's just not exactly how you would do it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, really important, unless you want to be completely overwhelmed and doing everything yourself.
And that's something else that, you know, one of your challenges, you said, and it's one of mine, I think it's one of everybody's listening now, is that juggle with everything, mm-hmm. with career, with family, with farm life. And I really liked something you said. Often there's not enough of me to go around to give all I want to give.
Yeah. And I think that that's a little bit of a reframe from sometimes feeling like there's not enough of me to go around for all of the things that want a piece of me.
Yeah, that's an exhausting way to look at it, isn't it? Because you feel like everyone wants, we feel like a pincushion.
Yeah. As opposed to all the things that I want to give a piece of me. And all of these different aspects of life I want to give to. But sometimes it's just not possible.
I wonder if that's helpful to people, because it just, you know, I sort of had a aha moment there with everyone saying it's okay to say no. But the thing is, sometimes we don't want to say no. We want to be doing these things.
Yeah.
Don't we?
Yeah.
So then we spread ourselves thin because we want to be doing it all. Mm. It's not just that we're saying yes.
Yeah. And, you know, we come across, you know, these things as, you know, we scroll through social media and there'll be a quote or something about, you know, some simple thing like saying no. But, yeah, it is not quite as simple as that because, yeah, these things we want to do, you know, there's people we care about and we want to give to.
And there's so many mixed messages. Sorry, there's so many mixed messages too. We're seeing stuff about give everything, you know, give everything, go, give it your all. Like that's what's drummed as us as kids. And, you know, we need to fight for what we want and, you know, give everything, but also we need to say no to things. So it's like such a balancing act. And I think that's what you were mentioning earlier about, or similar to what you're saying before about if we don't give everything, we're worried that we won't give anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowing, when to push and when to hold back. Like one little example of that for me was, with the AFK community dinners that you come and spoke at last week.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. So our first dinner back in October, I was going through not a good time, you know, mentally myself. I wasn't really in a good space. And so we were talking about, you know, who was going to do the intros or the speaking. And, you know, I actually just let myself off the hook because I knew I wasn't myself.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas then this time around, I knew, well, okay, I'm in a good space. And yes, this is still hard, but I've got to do it because, you know, I'm either going to push myself to do this stuff and grow,
mm-hmm.
or I'm not going to, and I'm just going to shrink back into a limited version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite quotes is that life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage. And that's a decision, you know, do I want to have an expanded full life where mm-hmm. I'm all of me? Or do I want to shrink back and have a limited life?
Mm-hmm. So inspiring. And so with something as well, this is just getting my brain going, yes. Potentially with thinking about those two things, giving everything your all and then saying no and learning to what, like what you did at that dinner, saying no. Yeah. I think potentially we need to learn these things all on our own. And so we need to give everything and get to the point where we've given too much to then learn where the line is.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you've got to go over that line to find where the line is.
Yeah,
and that's another hard thing. And that's where, you might fail and that might be really hard. But if you hadn't pushed yourself beyond where your limit was, you know, life is constantly bringing us things to show us, you know, to put our limits in front of us. And that's a great thing, you know, we should celebrate that.
Yeah, and that's how we learn. It's how we grow. It's everything, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it can be simple little things like, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be those big, scary challenges of life. It can just be the small things every day that push our buttons or irritate us. You know, one of my favorite teacher, he's a yogi, a spiritual teacher, Michael Singer. I highly recommend everyone check him out. So one of the things he talks about is letting go, learning to let go. And he teaches, you know, the technique of the relaxation, which is really, you know, a big part of what yoga is all about, is learning to relax the tension in our body. And he says that you start with the low-hanging fruit. So don't start with those big dramas or big stresses in your life. You've got to practice on the little annoyances, like someone leaving dishes on the bench or being stuck behind a slow driver. And all you do is you just take a long, slow breath and you relax your face, you relax your shoulders, you relax your chest, you relax your tummy. And then you just sort of listen to, you know, what's going on in your mind and you just try and let go. And it's a bit like, you know, all of the stuff is not easy, but anything that's hard, we get better with practice. And it's no different to a skill like playing the piano. You know, you're not going to sit down at the piano and be able to play Mozart. You've got to start with the scales.
Mm-hmm.
And those little things, that low-hanging fruit, are like doing your scales on the piano. It's your practice.
Such good advice. I think that can relate to exercise too, and that a lot of people who struggle to do, say, Pilates or yoga or meditation, is because it's so hard for them to slow down, so they prefer to do like a HIIT workout. So sometimes a sign that, you know, perhaps Pilates or yoga, you know, obviously yoga's slower, but Pilates can be quite a good segue into slowing down your movement. Usually that's a sign that that is something that is needed in your life, and it doesn't mean you have to do it all the time, but even if you're subbing one of your workouts each week, one of your HIIT workouts each week for a slower paced Pilates or a yoga.
And again,
breathwork,
it's
meditation.
Like, it's sort of, you know, those things in life showing you, what you actually probably need are the things that, are hard or challenging and sometimes counterintuitive to what you feel like doing.
I'm thinking about people who are in the early stages of having kids too, and where there's things you want to achieve and you can't because your focus is on your children. And, you know, maybe hearing our conversation here, feeling a bit like, oh, but there's stuff I want to do, but it's not the right stage for me. It doesn't have to be big things, does it? Like you said, it could be the low hanging fruit. It could be making exercise more a part of your life or improving your nutrition or sleep. It doesn't have to actually be work goals or farm goals or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I heard you say, Kate, that you were, describe yourself as an all or nothing type person. And I think, I'm very much the same. So, you know, that's something to work on, I think, because, you know, the way we build our self-discipline is just by the little things we do each day. And teaching ourselves that I'm the type of person who can follow through.
And even if it's something little away.
Yeah. And if you do fall off that wheel, then it's not, all is over. There's always tomorrow. You can start again tomorrow. And one of the things with exercise, I think that helped me last year with going walking was, it doesn't have to be, an hour of intense physical exercise. Okay, walk for half an hour. And often, again, I think I might have heard you say this, often you do end up carrying on for longer.
Yes.
You make it 10 minutes, make it bite-sized. And as you keep up those little habits, yes, you get the benefits of the physical exercise or whatever it is that you're doing. It might be meditation or yoga or your eating habits, but you also get that mental discipline or self-discipline of knowing, I'm someone who does what I say I'm going to do.
And those neural pathways are still formed, so the habits still become created, whether it's 10 minutes or an hour, they still can be built on.
I mean, I think without this, none of this probably mind stuff would be nowhere near as meaningful. And that's the whole idea of the neuroplasticity. It used to be thought, science used to think that our brains were just these fixed things that we're born with and stuck with what we got. But they now know that our brains are constantly changing and they're changing anyway. So whether we are consciously working on changing them in the ways we want or we're just letting it happen by chance, it's happening. The brain forms new connections in response to the things that you're experiencing, but also in response to your thoughts. You can change any of those thoughts or those things that have been handed down to us through evolution as well.
It's so useful for people to know, you don't have to be stuck in those thought patterns, do you?
Yeah. And again, it's the same thing. The mental fitness is the same as the physical fitness. It's the small little things you do each day that add up over time.
Something I wanted to talk to you about too was, everyone listening, Nadine wrote me through the most amazing list of challenges and things and learnings before the podcast, which is amazing and really highlighted how much you do love writing. It's amazing. Yeah. And one of the things you said was that you don't actually do much on the farm. You'd play a big support role. And I really related to that because that's me as well. And I wondered if you, like me, ever feel sometimes like, I guess, that there's some sort of failure in that and that you're not good enough because of that, or that you're not helped, I can't really put it into words, but do you feel that as well sometimes?
Yeah.
That you're not contributing how you should be?
Yes.
Even though, like for me, my business financially does a lot for our family. So it's not about the money. It's about, I guess it's the traditions and the belief that people have that, I guess that historic belief of what a farmer's wife should do and be. Yeah.
Absolutely, 100% feel that. And I think, when it's a comparison thing, I suppose, and sometimes, if there's a lot of other people around you, in your community who that they are more involved in the farming business than you, that can create those judgments on yourself. But something that was really rewarding for me last year, there was a New Zealand Angus breeders, the first time they'd done a 3-day event for women up in Gisborne. And it was really cool to see that, there was 15, 16 of us in the group, and there was a whole range of level of involvement in the farming business, from ones who had absolutely no involvement, had their own full-time job and career or business, to some that were partly involved in some of the things behind the scenes with admin and office stuff, and to ones who were fully involved. So that was really refreshing to me to know that yeah, not everyone is.
Yeah, it looks different for everybody, doesn't it?
It looks, totally. It looks different for everyone, and that's okay.
Mm. I think mine probably stems from my husband feeling like sometimes, because he does his accounts, he manages all that himself, that a lot of farmers' wives do that. Mm. So I think sometimes he feels when he's stressed a bit.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, but he's the only one that has to do that.
Yeah.
And so then that gets put onto me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that just comes back to, you know, what we're going to allow ourselves to take on mentally. Mm. And
yeah, I shouldn't let that in because I know that I'm maxed out and I'm contributing a lot. And yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard not to. In some ways, I think, you know, I'm not sure how, you know, I think in my situation, it's the best for our relationship. I have my husband is so passionate about what he does, but, you know, I have things I'm passionate about too. Mm. And really to be at best, we have to be filling. That's cup filling.
Mm.
You know, working on the things that you're really passionate about and interested in. Because that, yes, definitely there's times it just feels like work and hard slog. Mm-hmm. There's no way around that. But that's where, you know, you're doing it beyond just the money or the financial return. You're doing it because it's something you really are genuinely passionate about and interested in.
Because I'm sure there's lots of people out there who are doing things that they're not passionate about, but it contributes to their household and, you know, helping on the farm ensures that they can keep the farm and all those types of things.
Yeah.
So what advice to them would you have? I guess it's finding something else that they're passionate about, like a sport or a hobby.
Mm.
How do they keep their cup full if they're, you know, feeling like they're slogging away day to day on something that's not their true passion?
Yeah, you've just got to find some avenue. And yes, it could be a hobby, a sport. You can only do what you can do with where you're at. And just looking, you've got to look for small ways to bring that meaning into your life and to be able to bring some of those things that fill your cup into your life.
And it might be going to like an AFK dinner, a rural women's dinner, and catching up with friends, I guess, just working out what fills your cup.
Yeah, maybe doing, you know, a little bit of learning or online study and, you know, can you carve out an hour a day or, you know, even if you start with an hour a week, you know, what little bit of time can you carve out for that thing that fills you up? Mm. And I mean, maybe over time, you know, it's always hard in those years, particularly for people who've got small kids or primary school age kids, because it's so all consuming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I'm sort of coming out the other side of that. My youngest, I've got four kids and my youngest is starting high school next year. So I'm really feeling like, you know, it's definitely mixed emotions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a big part of me that, it's my time.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's where exercise can be so amazing for people too. And if they're in that, in the trenches, having that 20 minutes a day or three or four times a week that it's for you, it's just for you, working on yourself, feeling great afterwards. Sorry, I've been unplugging exercise a bit more than usual, but I just felt like it's had its opportunities.
100% connected. So,
And so you didn't grow up on a farm?
No, I didn't. No. So, again, sometimes that probably comes into, you know, what we're talking about before of maybe sometimes feeling that inadequacy because, it doesn't come naturally to me. It's amazing actually when I do start talking to people who are not farmers, you know, towny folk, and I start, you know, telling things about the farm or I think, oh, actually I have learned a thing or two.
Yes, I love that too.
I do know some things, you know.
As long as I don't dig too deep into the questions.
Exactly.
Sometimes people ask me, oh, what's Mark doing on the farm, and sometimes I've got no idea. But then I flip it around and it's like, does he know what I'm doing with my work at the moment? No. So I don't see why it has to be the other way.
Yes, that happens to me all the time as well. this time of year, Paul goes away traveling a lot, visiting clients and things. And sometimes my mother-in-law will say, oh, where's Paul today? I'm like, I have no idea. But it's like, you know, we can only take in so much. Yes. And we're going to,
Can definitely relate to that. So tell us about Pep Talk.
Yeah, so, really. What is it? So it started as a print magazine. I just wanted, a way to share everything I'd learned and everything I still am learning. And I love print. So previously I had a business called This and That magazine, and it sort of grew from this A3 photocopied piece of paper that I started distributing around Blenheim. And over the course of 7 years, it grew into this glossy magazine, and I launched an edition in Nelson and Christchurch as well. This is when my kids were little. I was working on franchising the business, and then I just had this stock take of shit, I'm missing my kids grow up. Mm-hmm. So I sold the business, and it was absolutely the right decision for me then.
Does someone still run it now?
I sold it, and it's changed its name. It's now called the Marlborough Magazine, but it's still functioning.
Good on you. You've got a bit of a legacy there.
So it was definitely awesome that it carried on, because something that I obviously put a lot of myself into. I just love print, and whenever every time I get Pep Talk in the mail or back then with This and That, the first thing I do is just pick it up and smell it. Like, I just, and the texture, and it's tactile. And I think when it comes to well-being, a physical print magazine, goes so well with that, because we're also taking a break from a screen and all those pings and dings and notifications that are constantly popping up at us.
Yes, I find it quite interesting when you see these health and well-being tips, and it's like less screen time, and you're reading it on your screen.
Yes. whenever you're reading something on a screen, or listening to, YouTube, whatever, you can just end up down a rabbit hole and be in a, any article you're reading online, there's all these links that then take you to another article, and all of a sudden you're just overwhelmed.
And you're reading something really crazy that you would never have clicked on to begin with.
Yeah. It's like, how did I end up here?
Yesterday at lunchtime, my husband was like putting his name into a thing. You put your name in, and it tells you how popular your name was in New Zealand over the years.
Yes. And then we just get sucked into this stuff. So I started with the print magazine, you kicked off with a big challenge. So that very first issue arrived at my doorstep from the printers, and 3 days later we went into that first COVID lockdown. So I had this really big launch event happening. We'd sold 800 tickets, and we had Dr. Lucy Hone coming to launch the magazine.
Pep Talk the magazine.
And that was sort of my, marketing strategy, was getting those initial subscriptions and things to cover that first print run at that launch event.
And was it going to be designed for nationwide or your region? Nationwide, yep.
Yeah, nationwide, yep. During that lockdown,
I keep butting in, but did it go ahead, the launch day?
So it did 6 months later.
Okay, sorry.
So that was initial, just that feeling of panic.
Awful.
Yeah. So I just, so we got into that lockdown. I think it was probably not till a couple of weeks, and I thought, well, we've got all these magazines. I really wanted to get them out there. One, to help people, but also to let people know about it.
How much did it cost? Do you mind sharing how much it cost to do that first print run?
It would have been probably $6,000, I think, but about $6,000. So, you know, I had all worked out, you know, I'd done my kind of maths of how many subscriptions we needed to cover that and then just build from there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I started putting it out there on social media that we would give, you know, people could come online and just pay the postage and we'd send them a copy. And what came from that was it did just start to get it out there, but also it just really gave me the push and the encouragement to go forward, because I just started getting all of these messages about how much people were loving it. And it makes me teary just thinking about it now. And that really carried on throughout the whole 2 years that I was printing it. It was just, you know, constant emails, messages of people saying, you know, how much it was helping them. You know, it might be, and from all different people. So school guidance counselors were a big one, that it was just, you know, this great tool they could use that had, that was just really tangible, that they could use with a student that they were finding it hard to get through to.
And so to what sort of things were in it? So articles?
Yeah, so articles. So either we'd have contributors, you know, contributing an article, I had a few different writers and we'd interview people and write an article. So, but I really tried to break it up with just making it really visually engaging. So interactive. So there'd be little exercises that you could write and fill in as well. And I think that visual appeal is a really great way of getting people to engage with it.
Right. Yeah. And then after so you sent them in COVID, you sent them out, people paid the postage. And then 6 months later you launched properly?
Yep. Yes. So I originally it was going to be seasonal, so every 3 months. So that next issue didn't come till 6 months later because of that, the COVID lockdown and everything that had happened with that. So I did the launch event and just carried on with the pushing and getting it out there. The subscriptions were continually building and that, you know, that feedback continually kept coming in. In the end, I think it was October 2022. The other thing that happened was through COVID, the cost of print really increased.
Companies went under, didn't they?
Yeah. And so the print company we were working with, Avato, I had a really good print rate because I'd worked with them way back since I had this and that.
Yeah.
And they went under, they closed down. Mm-hmm. So, to shift print companies, it was a massive hike in the print cost. And that was just really like the final nail in the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like, well, you know, I'm still passionate about this. I still want to keep, you know, working on this, but I have to find other ways. Pivot, exactly. that very trendy word.
And so how did you pivot?
Online, really, knowing that it would have to be online. I also know that, I'll always love print and I would love to do something again in print one day. But the thing for me is it's just taken all of that pressure off, so I can work on it now more organically around all those other things that I have in life that I also want to give myself to.
Mm-hmm.
I am still really working through what's the best way, not necessarily the best way to do it, but I also feel like there's just so much stuff online. You know, how can I do something that's a bit different, a bit more, that's really going to engage people? And also it's, you know, constantly feeling like I'm going down these rabbit holes of information overload because there's just so much to learn. And we talked a little about that before with, you know, there's there's the sleep, the nutrition, the exercise, the whole spiritual and contemplative side of, you know, bringing in mindfulness and meditation and becoming self-aware. And then there's all your mental mind tools. So it's thinking about, you know, what is the most important thing and trying to hone in on that to give myself a place to start when there's so much I could share.
So many people want and need mental health support or mindset work, but don't necessarily have the courage or feel that like they need to have therapy. Mm-hmm. Like, can you create a platform for people to access it themselves? I guess that's what you've already got with your newsletters.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking, can you charge people? Because it's free, isn't it? Or do you have people that pay to advertise on it?
Yeah, so what I'm working on doing is creating some online courses, but it was just exactly how I structure that, whether it's an ongoing membership where there's, you know, new content put up each week, and building more of a portal of the different things people can access, or whether it's, and this is what I am leaning towards, is creating more short bite-sized courses.
I think that's what people feel like they can have time for.
Yes.
I spoke to someone last week in my podcast, and they used to have 8-week courses. This is for organization around the home, but it felt too long, so she's changed it to 4.
Yeah, yes. I think people definitely need that bite-sized.
To get started, to break down the barriers.
Yes. We all live with information overwhelming. There's stuff coming at us from everywhere. So I think for me, to be sustainable, I think that's the way to go, because the other aspect to the online thing is you're creating the content that people are actually going to buy, that you charge for, but then you're also got that more sort of free content that's more of the nurturing stuff that's building your audience. And then there's the getting it out there with social media. So, and I know I don't need to tell you, Kate, like just how time consuming all of that stuff is.
But you just get started. You just do it and you learn as you go.
Exactly. And that's why I think, I just got to, because there is a part of me that knows it's procrastination because of that kind of fear of failure. Mm-hmm. And I think discontinuing the print magazine brought up those, you know, same feelings from back in the gymnastics days of that, sense of failure. But, you know, I do have some more tools to manage that now and to work through that, which I have been doing. But sometimes you've just got to allow yourself that time before you leap back into the next thing. And it's, you know, something I know about myself that, you know, I am that I am someone who does just leap head first into stuff. And so the last 18 months has been really different for me because I've taken that time to really step back and reflect and just really am holding myself back from jumping in to make sure that whatever I do next is sustainable.
Nice. Isn't it interesting, like for some people a win is leaping in and doing it, and for others the win is not leaping in and doing it. It's just learning like what is going to be what's right for you and where are you at on your journey of I guess putting yourself out there.
Exactly. And you know, sometimes you just need to do the opposite to what you would typically do.
Which is hard, isn't it?
It is. But it's been a really great sort of 18 months of reflection for me, and all along that way I've learned so much more about the mind, and I really feel I've honed it down to that, you know, number one key thing that we all need to start with is the awareness thing, using learning meditation and mindfulness so that you can develop that ability to step back from your mind, your thoughts and emotions, your reactions. I really think that's the key first step. Without that, you can't work on the other stuff. You need that self-awareness.
Well, otherwise it's just constantly you're going round in circles and you're constantly going to someone else for help rather than being able to be sustainable and work out yourself maybe what the issue is and what you need to change, yeah. isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm excited to see what you, sorry, excited to see what you create.
Yeah, so I am working on it. And yeah, it's letting go of the perfectionism of, you know, looking perfect and that, you know, that first edition of it. So mm-hmm. yeah, I really do need to bite the bullet and get that out there as soon as possible.
Like I said in Blenheim, we laugh at what Dedicate used to look like at the very start and think, yeah. how do people sign up to this?
Yeah, and that's so cool to look back. You know, I love that. I love looking back at where, yeah, people like you, where you've got to with Dedicate, and it is just, you've got to start somewhere and, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Nadine. Before we finish up, I've just got some this or that questions. Now, one of them's quite heavy after what you've said. I wrote it obviously before I interviewed you, but I'm going to keep it in anyway. HIIT or weights?
Weights.
Cool. Well, weights are heavy. Yeah, they are. Yoga or Pilates? I think I know the answer.
Yeah, yoga.
Exercise in the morning or afternoon?
Morning.
Okay, would you rather write or read?
Right. Oh, well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, that is.
They kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Yes.
But you've got to choose one.
I'll say right.
Would you rather make a goal too easy or too hard?
Yeah. I know I do the too hard. Mm. Often I wish I would do the too easy, but no, I always go for the too hard.
Would you rather regret doing something or regret not doing something?
Not.
That's the one I thought.
I regret not doing something.
Yeah. Would you rather a pep talk or a motivational quote?
I love motivational quotes. I'll go with the quotes.
Painful truth or comforting lie?
Again, got to go with painful truth.
Two more. Skydiving or bungee jumping?
Bungee.
Have you ever done either?
I've done the bungee, so that's why I'm choosing that one.
Yeah, then you don't have to go skydiving.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. Would you rather be invisible or read minds?
I think read minds. Because I'm fascinated with minds.
It's almost what you do now anyway.
Yeah, well, as scary as that would be, you know, I think, yeah, all of us, you know, thought of our, you know, if the voice in our head was going to be broadcast out on a loudspeaker, we'd probably lock ourselves in our bedrooms and never come out.
Right, and isn't it, you know, we say so much to it, you know, in a dialogue is so negative. We'd never speak to other people like that or never think that of someone else. And sometimes people say something here and there about themselves. You just think, how can you think that? You're amazing. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I know. It's, yeah. And that's it. Yeah. Awareness of being able to actually listen to what that voice in there is saying, because we kind of get hooked into just thinking that voice is us. Mm. Yeah.
So is there an evolutionary reason for that?
Not necessarily particularly for that. Well, I mean, I think we do have to listen.
Keep yourselves in line, kind of.
Yeah, it is designed to keep us safe, and you know, that evolutionary function of the negativity bias, why we tend to focus on the negative things. It's there for a reason. It's to keep us safe. In the same way, you know, we have to have negative emotions. I mean, this isn't about being happy all the time. We need the negative and the positive.
And I guess in the modern world, if we hesitate and or have a negative experience, we hold on to it because there aren't bears chasing us or anything like that. So
yeah,
not here anyway. In some countries, no. Sarah.
I mean, it's just crazy how your body reacts, you know, to some things as if, yeah, there is literally an axe murderer chasing you. But you think, yeah, you got to just probably had to find ways to calm that down. You know, I was listening to a podcast with Oprah the other day. She's just written a new book with Arthur Brooks. Got it sitting right beside me. It's called Build the Life You Want. It was my holiday book. And she was saying, you know, when she started the Oprah show, that she'd get, you know, all this thousands of fan mail and be all this positive fan mail, and there'd be one letter that was negative, and she'd literally hunt that person down and she'd ring them up and say, it's Oprah here.
Yeah.
And she'd ask, you know, she'd have them up about their negative feedback. You know, then, you know, they were talking about how if she had kept doing that, she never would have been the success.
Focusing on that one thing out of 100.
So, yeah, to learn. Yeah, and it's illogical, isn't it? If you've got 1,000 positive messages and one negative, that's
all how her mind is perceiving it. It's focusing.
Focusing on that.
And it's interesting you spoke about that negative. Like, I had one person who said, me as podcast host, terrible, telling people how they should think, all this kind of stuff. So I just honed in on that. And so when I try not to talk when I'm talking to people, but like when talking today, I couldn't help it because I was just so interested in what you're saying that I feel like I've got things to contribute, but it's really hard to get that line.
But then
I feel like I should just go with what feels right. Like, I should be working on learning to be better, but also that's me being engrossed in how I communicate. That's me being engrossed in what we're talking about. And if I pause too much and not say anything, then it feels really like blunted. Like,
yes,
I know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the perfect balance, but also it makes it more of a conversation. I thought that was perfect. Yeah,
and I read the negative comment right when I shouldn't have. Like, I think I was needing – I went and looked at the podcast reviews when I was needing some positive which is not what you should do. You know, I was able to be aware and learn from that and go, okay, that's not – you know, I shouldn't – I went fishing for the endorphins.
Yes, and you didn't.
And I didn't get it. I got the absolute opposite, so I wasn't in the right mindset to get that feedback. So that was a big learning.
Yeah, that really is. And, you know, I just, you know, I think everything we're talking about, like, and I feel like I just keep coming back to the self-awareness thing, but it just keeps coming back to that knowing yourself and understanding that. And, it doesn't mean you're always going to be able to stop it. You know, I'm most definitely not a master at this stuff, but I'm constantly working on it.
I think that's such a good take home, isn't it? That we just keep working on these things. Same with exercise. Here I go again saying exercise, but same with exercise. Just keep seeing, you know, keep working on being more consistent. If you're struggling to be consistent, just keep trying.
And that's what got me. And I talked about, you know, last October, I was going through a little bit of a hard time mentally, and it was the nutrition thing, sorting out my nutrients. I've started this green powder, I can't remember the name of it, that I'm taking, and my vitamins and minerals and the exercise. Sometimes it's not until you're in a really bad place. It's like the motivation of pain versus pleasure. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you need that pain to push you to get started. The pain has to be bad enough that you have to do something about it.
And again, that comes back to, we learn so much from the challenging times, and it actually ends up being a positive experience. A really challenging experience ends up being a positive experience because you realize you've got to make changes and things need to look and be a different way. Thanks so much, Nadine. Thank you so much for your time. Have an amazing day, and keep in touch.
Yeah, awesome. Great.
Thanks.
To talk to you.
Okay. See you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you all so much for listening to the Dedicate podcast. And thank you so much to Nadine for your time and incredible insight. If you enjoyed this episode and you missed the following, check them out. Sarah Dickey, Bulimia, Motherhood and Mindset Coaching. Caro Patterson, My Experience with Overtraining and Undernourishing. And the Two Raw Sisters, Overtraining, Eating Disorders, Chronic Fatigue, What Rock Bottom Taught Us. Amazing women who have all learnt so much from their own experiences. If you're not already a Dedicate member, come and join us. A huge variety of short and effective online workouts and a super supportive community of women across New Zealand and Australia. Head to kateivyfitness.com for your 7-day free trial. See you there.